I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny. We can't call in. Top star, free balling.
Okay, ready?
Three.
One. Oh, you're doing it? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, three, two, one. So if you if you listen to last episode, you're now prepared for the new this episode, which is top five movies of 2021.
Yep.
Same idea as last time. You want to get into the honorable mentions?
So just a quick refresher. So in this episode, we're gonna have a couple honorable mentions to start. Then we're gonna do our favorite comedies, our favorite drama, our favorite blockbuster movie, surprise favorite, and then overall favorite for the year. So let's dive into honorable mentions.
I went first last time, so it's your time. It's your time to go first.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Since you went first, yeah, I'll go first this time. Yeah.
Awesome.
Love how we both said the same thing essentially.
Yeah, essentially, but.
Same.
I still don't hear you giving your honorable mentions, sir.
All right. I'm going. All right. So honorable mentions for me: Mitchells versus the Machines.
The comedy, the comedy animated.
Yeah, it's such a good movie.
Hmm.
Weren't expecting that shit, were you?
100% no. There's all a good right, chance my mic just picked up me farting. By the way.
Fantastic.
I hope it did. If it didn't, turn me up so you can.
Oh, Jesus. All right, so Godzilla versus Kong is another honorable mention.
Oh, we love a bit of Godzilla. We love a bit of Godzilla. We love a bit of Kong. This is I'm annoyed I couldn't see that movie review just because of how much we like every movie in that series so far. Yes, me and Sebastian like Kong. Me and Sebastian like Godzilla, King of Monsters. It was awesome.
And it's just stupid popcorn fun, which is,
and sometimes you need stupid popcorn.
It's okay. It is okay to have. Not every fucking movie has to be about a debilitating existential crisis. You can just have two monsters beating the shit out of each other for 2 hours. It's fun.
Exactly.
Right. My last honorable mention was Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. Same reason.
Same thing. And it was just a bloody fun time. Like when you're playing the games, that's all it is. You're not in there for the fucking story.
I have so many friends and people, like you said, just the story, that go to me, it's like, oh, apparently the story's wank. Tell me the story of Mortal Kombat 1 through 10, you twat. You can't. But what this movie does is, you know, when a character walks into a moment, it's like, there's going to be a fight here because I recognize this arena. Mortal Kombat.
And just, like, the fucking fatalities. They're so graphic.
Oh, my God.
But, like, that's exactly what they're supposed to be.
Liu Kang's bloody helmet chopping off that fucking winged bitch in half.
Yep. Mate. Oh, fuck.
Oh, that was brutal. Sorry, I don't mean to call her a bitch, but, like, if you watch the movie, she's got wings and she is annoying.
She's evil. She's a bitch. That's what she
is. She's one of those, like, I don't want to, like, she isn't, there's a rabbit hole here. Pass me the shovel, Sebastian.
All right, how about before we dig this, let's move into your honorable
mentions. My honorable mentions. Free Guy.
Nice.
Great. Loved it. Wasn't expecting to love it. There was a good chance this could have been my surprise, but my surprise was just too good. No Time to Die. If you remember back to our top movies of all time, you always remember your first, which for me, I chose Pierce Brosnan's crap.
I want to say it was Die Another Day.
Die Another Day. That's the one. Yeah. This one, like, subverts all expectations of Bond movie. And ruh-roh, everybody. Why is this an honorable mention and not in top five? Spider-Man is only an honorable mention for me.
My top
five was just... I wrote movies quicker than I wrote TV when it came down. Like, when you gave me the... Like, when you gave me a couple of days ago the format, you kept speaking to me whilst I was trying to put movies into the format. I was like, yo, shut up for a sec and let me try and see if I can do this. And 30 seconds later, did it. It was easy. Like, I looked at this, that's my overall. That's my comedy. That's my blockbuster. That's my drama. ? And that's my surprise.
Nice.
I couldn't touch it. It's the whole, you know, if you've got a multiple choice question and you choose an answer, stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fucking I think me. For me, like, Spider-Man, like, it, I just want to speak about it for a little bit. Like, just give me 2 seconds. I know we weren't supposed to, but I want to. And you can't stop me because you're an American. I'm in the UK.
No, but it is in my five. So I don't want to spend too much time on it because I.
But
I
you were, am no. But, like, it's for me, it's like it was more fan service than it was a great movie.
Okay. Gotcha.
Like, I've seen the movie a few times now in cinemas, and just I get excited about the same moments. And I think it's the same moments everyone else gets excited about. And I just come out of the movie and I just think, overall, The Dark Knight is still my favorite superhero movie of all time.
I gotcha. Okay.
The villain, the acting, the story. What Spider-Man has is fan service. And I'm not going to speak about it because I want you to speak about it. But that's why it's an honorable mention, not my top five movie. Let's go into top five movies. Let's do surprise first because it's like, you know.
Surprise!
Yes, yeah, surprise! Butt sex. The best thing you never knew you needed. Actually, you know when I did adverts a couple of episodes ago? Let me do that again. Surprise! Butt sex. The best thing you never knew you needed. Right, my surprise. Bob Odenkirk. Nobody. Nobody! The reason this movie was called Nobody was because nobody expected this movie to be so fucking good. Like, Christopher Lloyd blows a guy away in an old man's chair with a double barrel shotgun. My guy's literally just sitting there, and it, like, these two guys' fingers are, oh, he's, you know, it's just some old guy. Pow. Shotgun to the balls.
Pow.
And then RZA as well. Like, name one other thing you know this guy from besides Wu-Tang Clan and Californication. You can't because he's not done anything else. And, like, no one know. Like, even my parents, like, who the fuck is that guy? I was like, that's RZA. Because I showed my parents this movie was that good. You know how bland it is to start a movie? Like, it's so student to do, like, this is the guy's routine. He wakes up, he goes to work, he gets yelled at, he goes to bed. The way this movie uses that sort of montage to start its movie to, like, sort of create that, like, you know, the reason this guy's doing this is because he has to, because if he doesn't, he's a badass and everyone's gonna want him dead. Have you seen? Please tell me you've seen Nobody.
No, I never got around to it.
Oh, bud. No, you know, oh, mate, as soon as you fit, like, if you haven't finished Cobra Kai, finish Cobra Kai, watch Nobody, just because of how good Bob Odenkirk is in it, man.
All right.
Like, especially, like, this guy probably finished Better Call Saul, was probably, like, was probably given a schedule to do Better Call Saul season 5, that I can't wait for, by the way. And he was like, nah, I'm going to do this movie first, because, you know, it is just, oh, man, I don't want to say too much, because now I want you to watch it, but Christopher Lloyd, in an old man's chair with a shotgun, you're not prepared for how awesome that singular moment is, especially with the reaction of the guy who runs the sort of retirement home. It's just great. That whole sequence is great. Yeah, Nobody is a good 8 out of 10, 8.5, 9 if you're drunk.
Nice.
9.5 if you're other things. All right, dude. Hit us with your surprise. Surprise me. All right.
So my surprise favorite was In the Heights.
In the Heights. You know how I know this was going to be in your top five?
How?
Not that I lurk Sebastian, everybody, but we're friends on Spotify. I would wake up to go to work. Well, work at my computer every morning, and I would choose some music. As I chose some music, I would see my friend Ryan, what he's currently listening to, because he's at work painting and he listens to music. Loudwire being the only sort of music sort of company I follow, because I trust them when it comes down to top metal albums of the year. And then it was you. And it was always something or other In the Heights.
Fucking Spotify, give away my shit.
It was fucking me being a lurky turkey. I will lurk you, dude.
For me, obviously the biggest thing is the representation in the movie. That was just a huge, huge connection for me. And then the music, fuck me, dude. The music. There's a reason that I listen to it so much. It's so infectious, and there's certain songs in the movie that motivate me. Like, I remember the first time that I watched the movie with my sister, I walked away feeling energetic and, like, inspired and fucking roaring to go. And, like, for me, those are the movies that, you know, those are the movies that last. Because one of the biggest things about the fucking movie is that, oh, it didn't perform. Like, It did same day theater and HBO Max release, and it still made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, like, relax. Everyone, relax your tits. It's fine. And, you know, the performances are good, and I really like it. And it's just an overall great step, especially, you know, for Latinos in Hollywood. Because at the end of the day, this is a big budget movie. Especially
to come out in the same year as West Side Story.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, and
that wasn't an easy decision to make for HBO, I bet.
But for me, and if I had to choose between the two, because I've seen both, but if I had to choose between the two, I definitely pick In the Heights over West Side Story.
Damn.
Like, I love Spielberg, but In the Heights was just, it just captured. I feel like it captured the culture a lot better. It felt more authentic.
Yeah.
And John M. Chu is just a great visual director. Like, he gets it, you know? So that's, so for me, my surprise favorite was In the Heights. I was not expecting to like it as much as I ended
up
liking it.
Didn't Lin-Manuel help with In the Heights?
Yeah, it's based on his Broadway show.
Oh, well, there you go. Anything Lin-Manuel touches is absolute fucking gold.
Absolutely.
The man appears in a singular episode of How I Met Your Mother and probably saved the whole season with his performance.
That episode was so good.
You talk about the last season of How I Met Your Mother, besides sort of complaining about the end. Please stop complaining about the end. Just let it be. You remember one other thing. It's either... thank you, Linus. Whenever Lily gets a drink, even though it turns out not to be a drink, Not really a spoiler alert at this point. 2015, yeah, no. 2015, fucking hell. But it's Lin-Manuel's sort of like when he helps Marshall Rhyme Canada on the coach. Holy crap. The problem is your man just tried to rhyme with Canada. It's about as hard to rhyme with orange. Like, it's just so fucking great. Yeah, man, you know, I love a good musical. You know me. I grew up with acting. I grew up with musicals. I'm still waiting for a good live action movie of Les Mis. Yeah, I said it. I'm waiting for a good live action movie of Les Mis. Tom Hooper's piece of bollocks bullshit was not good. If I hear Russell Crowe say Sentinels like the way he does, like, I've always wanted to be Jean Vert in, like, on stage for fucking Les Mis, and Russell Crowe ruined that dream for me single-handedly because of how bad his performance of Jean Vert was.
Jesus.
I hate that fucking movie, bro. Start to fucking finish. Anne Hathaway's performance, fucking bullshit. The fact she got an Oscar for it as well, fucking... I hope that Oscar is a doorstop. Right, what are we doing next? Comedy?
Yeah, I think we should do comedy.
Fucking love Les Mis, everybody. It's so great. No, it really wasn't. Right, number two comedy for me. This is why I didn't choose Spider-Man No Way From Home. Because I actually preferred Dun-Dun-Dun Suicide Squad.
Oh, fucking Suicide Squad.
Like, Warner Bros. Literally watched the crumbling of James Gunn and Marvel sort of through, like, in 2019 and early 2020, and was like, look, if they're done with him, we could kind of use him for our own IP that kind of needs a restart, which is kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, but with R-rated fun involved. Like, it's fucking... No one expected King Shark to be good, bro.
Seriously.
And then it didn't get any better when we learned that it was Sylvester Stallone voicing him. And it was like, okay, are we going to get like some sort of Rocky King Shark hybrid? No, all we got was one, a terrific Groot-like performance, mm-hmm. and two, a really memorable character with a great arc of just wanting to have some friends.
Yep.
Mate, yep. It was... And then just, like, the depth you get from the movie when you learn about how, like, David Dismalchian's sort of mental state at the time of filming and how the character sort of helped him through, like, sort of family deaths, his own depression. I don't really want to bring up someone else's depression, even though I don't know them, but, like... David Dismalchian has been pretty vocal about it on Instagram. You can't sort of not be aware. If you're not sort of following these people, you don't really know. But even my mum was like, why does this guy always look so sad? And I was like, probably because he's really struggling as he's filming this scene.
Yeah, fuck.
Which is probably why they waited to do the I'm a fucking superhero line until he felt right to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that line, I cry at that line as much as I cry as Yondu's death. Yondu's death and Polka Dot's death are on par with me. James Gunn knows how to kill a character, man. Jesus. James Gunn just knows how to write. Like, I don't ever want to see the guy write a movie about one character. I want to see this guy constantly do entourage, group, ensemble movies because he fucking thrives. And honestly, Suicide Squad could have easily... I could have honestly combined surprise and comedy for Suicide mm-hmm. Squad because no one expected Suicide Squad to be a 9.5 out of 10. And easily, it was.
It's so good.
And even then, people have been watching it over Christmas. People got it for Christmas, like on DVD or like they've been watching it on HBO or they're watching it before Peacemaker comes out. And I was like saying, how is this movie even better a second time around? Because Pete Davidson gets shot in the face. And you know what? He probably had a great time on set. Because It's fun. And it's like, it's, you know, it's so fucking funny. you know how No Way From Home sort of, no, and like, I hope you speak about this when you speak about No Way From Home, but like the redemption Captain Boomerang got, the redemption, all the returning characters from the original Suicide Squad got the redemption they got. Even Amanda mm-hmm. Waller, Viola Davis, Viola Davis's Amanda Waller, mm-hmm. like, she's fucking scary, bro. Like,
yeah.
when she gets battered around the back of the head, I'm expecting like a scene at the end of the movie where she's murdered everyone in that office because of what they've done. And Idris Elba, it's finally nice to see him just, like, one of my favorite things in a movie is when a character or an actor would generally say, "Oh, fuck off." And it happens when Idris Elba, he's latched on to the brick when Jotunheim is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's failed to jump well enough to sort of survive. And his tether is loosening. Like, he breaks his helmet on the wall, right?
Yeah.
And he's falling. And as just before he falls, he says, "Fuck off." And I was like, yep. That is, for me, that is as good as a Wilhelm scream. A genuine, "Oh, fuck off." I wish Spider-Man didn't blur out "fuck off."
Jesus.
Like, what the fuck? Like at the end of Far From Home and the start of No Way From Home, which was actually mm-hmm. refilmed for No Way From Home. A little bit of Easter egg information. I don't know if you knew that.
Nah.
They didn't reuse Far From Home footage at the start of No Way From Home. They refilmed it. Shot for shot.
Jesus.
Just that, like, that is, like, I'm not, like, I just need to sort of, like, tell everyone, just because it's not in my top five doesn't mean it's not a great movie. It's just, Suicide Squad just, it resonated with me. I can watch this movie every day until the day mm-hmm. I die and love it every single time. I think for me, Suicide Squad has a good chance of winning Best Editing. You heard it here first.
Fucking A.
Yeah. What's yours, comedy? I spoke for a while. I apologize, but if you're listening to the podcast, then you're here for me. You're here to hear me speak.
All right. So, comedy for me is Don't Look Up.
Oh, I've not seen this yet, and you're about to ruin it for me because this is how we've been doing TV and movies. Shit! Tell me everything, Sebastian, whilst I mute my headphones.
It is so fucking hilarious, and it's
as good as The Big Short.
It's definitely up there.
Can you not? Can I ask you? I'll speak on this one then.
I'll speak.
You know how much I love The Big Short.
Yeah, that's just why I'm going to say I'm going to speak around it. I'm not going to dive into it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you, Sebastian. And if you were here now, I'd give you a hug.
Like, okay, so it's just one of those movies, you know? It's one of those, like, slap in the face, here's reality movies, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like The Big Short.
Exactly. I feel like Adam McKay has found, like, his niche, like, you know, where he thrives. Because, like, the way this guy tells these stories, aside from making you feel utterly sick to your stomach because, you know, that's how the real fucking world is.
Absolutely.
You can't help but laugh at it because it's like, oh, we're so fucked.
Yep. Yep.
Like, goddamn. And then, like, oh, the performances are amazing. Jonah Hill, I swear to God, Jonah Hill, whenever he is tagged to play some sort of, you know, just that jerky asshole character, he knocks it out of the park.
I love him in War Dogs.
He's so good. He's so fucking good. And then to see him on screen with Meryl and Jennifer Lawrence and DiCaprio, and you're just like, fuck me. And then just the array of the cast alone is just like, holy shit. And I will say, though, I feel like the only reason Timothy Chalamet wanted to be in this movie is because, like, yo, so you saying I get some screen time with fucking DiCaprio? Oh, shit. And that's exactly how I imagine it went down.
I know I've got two pieces of information here. I've loved Jonah Hill. Like, I love Superbad, but I've loved Jonah Hill as an actor ever since he went toe for toe with Brad Pitt in Moneyball.
He's grown so much as
like,
an actor.
And then I heard that apparently he spent a whole day on set like running insults at Jennifer Lawrence to find the best ones. So I don't know how many times he insults her in the movie, but I'm looking forward to it.
It's so good. And like,
honestly, it's probably one I'm going to watch on New Year's. Like, so actually my New Year's Eve involves Irish trash cans made by yours truly.
Fuck, you're gonna die.
Whilst playing Mario Kart and Mario Party, trying not to get mad. And if you know me, I get a bit mad at games when I lose. So let's play some Mario Kart and have some Long Island iced teas and Irish trash cans, everybody, and try not to throw a controller through the wall at a house that isn't mine. Ryan, if I've thrown a controller at your wall, I will pay for it. And I understand if you're not talking to me anymore, but I won't. Nah, I'll be all right. It'll be a case of, you know, we're there for bants. Not there for winning, but winning is everything. And if I'm not winning, then I'm losing.
Jesus Christ.
Right, what are we doing next?
It sounded like you were hyping yourself up in a mirror. It's like, okay, this is how it's going to go down.
I am. I'm looking into, like, the mic is a mirror. Yo. Whoa. Right. About halfway through the episode compared to part one. So, and we've only done two. Let's get busy.
Let's move on to blockbuster or drama? Let's do blockbuster.
No, we're both unsure about our dramas, though. And blockbuster and overall, kind of similar.
Okay, all right, so fuck it, let's do drama then.
Yeah, because both of our dramas aren't really dramas, because we don't pre-know what we're both choosing, but like I sort of told Sebastian, I was like, I had to put something in the drama category, but it's more of a thriller horror, and mine is Last Night in Soho. And again, this could have easily been a surprise, because I know I've spoken to you about this movie and said I wasn't looking forward to it at all. But then I went to go see it, because for me it costs nothing, because in this country we have the unlimited card.
Fucking yeah. Edgar Wright, man.
And I'm sad that most of the reaction of the movie was my preconceived judgment. Most people reacted to this movie the way I pre-reacted to this movie, which kind of upset me. Like, I went online afterwards and I was like, most people reacting the way I did. It's like, does it feel like an Edgar Wright movie? Who's this co-writer that he was working with? This co-writer he was working with co-wrote 1917 with Sam Mendes, and I think she knows what she's fucking doing. Because she, like, both her, Kristen Wilson Keynes, I think she's Scottish. So, like, you would want to pronounce it Carnes, but it's, like, I'm pretty sure it's Keynes. I'm sorry for name butchering. But, yeah, this is one of the first movies Edgar Wright co-wrote with someone else. And you can tell it was co-written by someone else, but it needed to be, because Edgar Wright's never really written a well-rounded female character, unfortunately, unfortunately, like, take a look back, you know, from Shaun of the Dead to World's End, not really a strong female character in any of those, besides Shaun of the Dead, which, you know, there's that badass girlfriend, but she doesn't really get that many scenes compared to Sam Pegg and Nick Frost. And then there's
Baby Driver,
Lily Collins, bit of a Barbie doll, man.
Yeah, she's just kind of the girlfriend. She doesn't.
She's just kind of there.
Yeah.
She can sing, like, yeah, but like beyond that, it was more Ansel Elgort, like, oh, let me save you from your dead end diner job by being a criminal. Yeah, because that's how it works. And I'm glad they sort of get shafted at the end by getting caught. But apparently he's already written Baby Driver 2. He just doesn't know if he wants to direct it. And I was like, don't even write it then, dickhead.
Yeah, then what's the point?
Don't make me hard and then not make me come. Like, for fuck's sake.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not paid for you to edge me here, bro. Like, just fucking give me what I want.
Fucking A.
But yeah, Last Night in Soho, dude. Like, it, you know, sort of more of a horror thriller, but, you know, in a horror and thriller, there's drama involved.
Yeah.
And I think the performances, like, I wasn't expecting Matt Smith, Terrence Stamp to be as good in this movie as they were. And then Anya Taylor-Joy and Thomasin McKenzie absolutely nailed it as the two female leads. I mean, nailed it. Anya Taylor-Joy coming off Queen's Gambit. And I think the next thing I'm probably going to see her in is The Northman. We finally get a Viking movie that's blood, guts, rape, pillaging, and burn the fucking fields down Viking movie. None of this sort of, for Odinson with Mjolnir and the God of Lightning. And then like some Hollywood fucking PG-13 bullshit where like there's no blood or anything. Just research Vikings for like 2 seconds, you know, understand how every movie about Vikings is wrong. I'm actually losing my breath about this.
Jesus like, Christ.
Because no one's watched Vikings, the TV show, and if you say you have, you're lying. Like... But if you haven't, like, you know, before you go watch The Northman, if you're interested in watching The Northman, go watch Robert Eggers' previous movie, The Witch, but spelt with two Vs, Vivitch. Which also has Anya Taylor-Joy in it. Before, and I'm pretty sure because of that movie, she got...
Queen's Gambit.
Not Queen's Gambit, no, the one she did with James McAvoy. That was...
Split.
Before Split, yeah. She got that. And she got Queen's Gambit because of Split. So it's sort of like, bing, bang, bong. You know, bing, bong. Fuck your life. What do you want to say to Joe Biden right now? Hey, baby, take me out to dinner. Sorry. I'm on TikTok now. And I love those. Bing, bong. You can definitely find a soundbite of that we can use.
All right, so...
What's your drama that's not really a drama, question mark, quote-unquote, Bunny is?
Actually, this kind of ties to what I mentioned before. You know how I said that? So, initially, I was going to put King of Staten Island.
Yeah, huh?
But that movie came out last year.
Indeed it did.
My fucking... I guess the way I perceive time... I thought that movie came out this year. I was so fucking certain.
I will allow King of Staten Island because of how good that movie is.
No. I have another one. But I was so fucking certain. And I was just like, so then what the hell came out this year? I was just like, clearly, I'm reading the room wrong. So I Google shit. And then the movie that I've chosen was one that I wasn't expecting to like, but I really did. And so my drama is Judas and the Black Messiah.
Ooh.
That fucking movie.
When did that come out? Was it January?
Early this year. Yeah.
Okay, because like that got Oscars.
Mm-hmm. So like this movie, there's something about it. It might be because at the time I was really locked into like the 70s, you know, literally listen to the music.
Because you were researching your TV show at the time that was set in the 70s.
Yep. And so I saw this movie and then just touching on, you know, it's the late 60s.
The Black
and,
Panthers,
you know,
Black
Panther movements and, you know, just the idea of like this Judas and the Black Messiah. I didn't get it at first, but then watching you're like, holy fuck. And then you walk away. It's like, oh, yeah, it's a true story. It's like, yeah, of course it is. Of course it fucking is.
Yep.
It's like, God
damn. Isn't one of the characters also the real life character? The real life sort of character. Sorry, fuck me. I'm five beers in now. The real life person portrayed in the movie. Wasn't he also in Trial of the Chicago 7?
I think so.
Yeah. I can't remember the name. And I'm
Lakeith Stanfield, I think his name is.
No. That's what I'm...
The person.
Chicago 7. Give me 2 seconds. thankfully, of the way we're recording this now. Bobby Seale. portrayed by the new Morpheus, who was also in Watchmen and Candyman.
Mm-hmm. I like
Candyman. Him. Probably, actually, late honourable mention, Candyman. Really liked it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure Bobby Seale is in that movie that's your top drama.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like...
Daniel Kaluuya.
He's so good.
Everything that man is in is instantly watchable.
Oh, yeah.
Solely because of him. I'm just annoyed he's a little bit too old to be Miles Morales. Because he could have been. He's got the acting chops.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he could have pulled it off.
Just, you know, if at this point, what's his name? Caleb from Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yeah.
Yeah, if he's not Miles Morales, then we've got problems.
We've got problems.
We've got fucking problems. Right, Blockbuster. So you know how you mentioned Timothée Chalamet?
Yes. Oh, okay. I know what your Blockbuster is.
Dune. Yep. Holy shit. This movie took the block and busted it. Into smither fucking reams, just like fucking Arrakis. Arrakis Jeez. Got blown to shreds as much as the block in Blockbuster. This movie, man, Denis Villeneuve, and I pronounced that name right, and I know I did. Holy shit. He took a movie that has a cult following, you know, is generally not well-liked by the masses, especially in people who call themselves sci-fi fans, whatever the fuck that means. Because it's so, you know, I can like Terminator and be a sci-fi fan, but there's also people that like Aliens and they're sci-fi fans. You know what I mean? Not the same, you know, definitely not in the same sort of category sci-fi, because that's how far-reaching sci-fi is. But holy crap. Sorry, I'm just getting some texts. Give me your Blockbuster. Sorry, just Dune. That literally, like, this Dune. This is why I wanted to save Blockbuster and overall, because I don't know what to say about these movies besides them being top two of the year. Like, you know, because Blockbuster's never going to win any Oscars, but I expect my overall to win Oscars. That's why I said what I said earlier. Because, like, you know, the big fucking movies that everyone loves and everyone saw for some reason never wins the Oscars, but then, you know, the movie that no one sees, i.e. Nomadland, is the one that wins Oscars. I don't know anyone that's seen Nomadland.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Or anyone that talked about it after seeing it. More people talked about Sound of Metal. So I was like, Ed, you're a fan of metal. How are your ears working? My ears are shit. But like, I'm not blaming my love for metal, but I probably should because I listen to it loud and you know I do. Sebastian knows. I love, you know, tell the people, man. I love me some metal music.
The man loves his metal music.
But yeah, I don't know what to say about Dune besides just, I really wish everyone saw this movie in IMAX. It was the only way to see this movie. I saw this movie not in IMAX and I was like, yeah, it didn't ring the same. I've already pre-ordered the Steelbook and I don't pre-order a movie anymore. And I went into my nearest place to pre-order a movie and I was like, I don't know if I can, but can I pre-order the Steelbook for Dune? Like, yeah, you can. Right, I'll prepay the whole fucking thing now. That's how confident I am. I'm going to get this movie, watch this movie, and love this movie all over again.
Fucking A.
I'm glad Rebecca Ferguson was in this as well, because otherwise Rebecca Ferguson was only in Reminiscence this year, and Reminiscence... Shit.
Fucking A.
So what's your Blockbuster, Sebastian?
All right, so
Fuck, and you can speak about it a lot more than I spoke about mine. I just don't know what to say about Dune besides just go fucking see this movie whilst it's probably still in cinemas somewhere.
All right. So my blockbuster is Shang-Chi. So for those that don't know, just martial arts movies, you know, your Jackie Chan, your Jet Li, all those movies, that is my shit.
Your boy over here sat me down and made me watch The Drunken Master reluctantly and then looked at me throughout the whole movie. Like, Sebastian wasn't even watching the movie because he's seen it so many times. He's one of those guys that can hear the movie and know what he's seeing. He was more looking at me. He's like, is Ed watching this fight scene that is awesome? he is. And he was like, he was watching my reaction. He's one of those. Yeah, Sebastian's one of those guys. We all have that friend. Like, and I just remember finishing the movie and Sebastian's like, we just watched something else. He didn't even need to ask me whether I liked the movie because he knew from my reaction how much I was enjoying this movie. I know you're a martial arts fan.
And it's amazing because, you know, you see that, you know, coming into the MCU and it's like, holy shit. And then when you learn that fucking Jackie Chan stunt team helped develop the stunts and the fight scenes for Shang-Chi, and you're just like, holy shit. Like, holy crap. And then, I don't know if you watched the, like, the assembled documentary making of things that they have on Disney+. Plus.
I haven't. I need to. I watched it for Star Wars. The Star Wars Galaxy, I think it was, or the Galleries. Star Wars Galleries or some shit. I watched that one, but I've not watched it for Avengers, and I think I should for how much I love the MCU.
Like, just watching the making of Shang-Chi on it, and it's, you just, like, there's an appreciation and a fluidity and a respect to the way that the fight scenes are choreographed, and they're so
even a respect to Chinese culture that Hollywood has never had.
It's, like, so much, dude. Like, there's so many, like, myths and legends that are explored in it, and you think about, like, the source material of the movie, it's, like, it was pretty fucking racist. But out of that, they pull off this just a genuinely beautiful MCU movie. Like, I honestly think it's more beautiful than the Eternals. I like the way the fucking Eternals.
Oh yeah, 100%. I liked Eternals, but Shang-Chi. Woo!
Oh man, that like, fucking bus scene. The bus scene alone.
Bus scene's great for me. How like they told a love story. In a fight between, like, the Mandarin?
His parents, yeah.
His parents, sort of the Mandarin, quote-unquote, real Mandarin, and his mom. Like, the fact that he went into this expecting a guardian, and he was like, I'm going to beat the shit out of this guardian, and I'm going to go straight into the promised land and take what I want. And actually, sort of throughout this fight, just is... The power balance, the power shift, going from, are we fighting or are we flirting? Are we in love now? Mm-hmm. Are you pregnant? Like, what? Like, hey, baby, take me out to dinner. What do you want to say to Joe Byron right now? Bing bong.
and like, it's funny to see because, like, you see the progression of Shang-Chi's character. He's like... He's fighting hard, and the way his fucking fighting style changes over the course of the movie, where it's angry and merciless and vengeful, and it combines into this, like, almost an understanding and, like, giving into nature and the way you move, your body moves. Just, you know, him accepting that other half of himself was just so... It was done so fucking well.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And Simu Liu is so... fucking funny, and Awkwafina is so funny. So, like, this movie is just amazing.
That was going to be my next point. After sort of hearing you sort of almost gush, I wish I'd gushed this much about Dune. I think in me not gushing about Dune, I hope people understand I was gushing about Dune. I just speechless is the word I think I need to sort of implore here. But, like, you know, as you're saying, Awkwafina. And, like, all we need to say to end Blockbust is, cool wind in my hair. The moon smell of curly death.
Fuck you, copyright.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
Why am I Indian? Fuck's sake. Right, overall, you have no idea what my overall is, which is why I want you to go first, motherfucker.
Well, I mean, considering it was... I'm pretty sure I gave it away, but my overall for the year...
Let me, everyone, silence.
Shh. Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
All right, Sebastian. You've got about 20 minutes. Go ahead, talk. I'm just going to cross my legs, open a beer, and just listen to the king of Spider-Man talk about how much he loves. This is why it's not on mine, honestly. Like, I will admit this. I do not like Spider-Man as much as you do, which is why I think I chose not to put this in my top five. Because I know how much... I got my PS5 to play Spider-Man because in the year I played with Sebastian, like, I hope you don't mind me talking about this, but your coping mechanism at times was, you just said to me, it was like, mind if I swing around? And I just sat down and I was like, mate, do it. And it's you're so laughing because you know I'm fucking right. And so I just true. And I just watched you lose yourself in this game, and you'd pause it to talk me through things that you knew I didn't really understand or know what I was watching. So you sort of held my hand a little bit, and in you holding my hand, I fell in love with the PlayStation for the first ever time. Because of you, I got my PS5. Because of you, I got Spider-Man, and I played through it. And I even talked to you. I was like, Sebastian, I don't know what I'm doing here. Help me. And like. It was this time last year, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It was almost this time last year I was texting you. It was like, Sebastian, I need help. Like, I suck at this game. Help me. Help me! I'm not going to say the next word if you know what I'm I will let Sebastian talk about Spider-Man, but, like, just be prepared. The man is about to go in. Take it away, Sebastian.
Fuck, dude, that is so much hype.
I know how much this movie means to you.
Like, that is probably as much hype as the fucking movie had, because...
My overall isn't... It has no comparison. I probably should have gone first. At this point, do you want me to do mine? So we can, set yours up and then beat them down so we can bring them back up again. Just when I try to come out, they pull me back in again. Get ready to see that in Sopranos when you start this.
Fucking
so my overall, I hope I know this isn't one of the valet guys skits, but Willie Smith's is my shit. And he kills it in King Richard, my dude. How do you do a Serena and Venus Williams biopic and not actually make it about Serena and Venus Williams? And at the same time, get it so right. Fucking nailed John Berenthal. Willie Smith's. Oh, man. Every scene. Like, yes. I will admit there's some things apparently that, like, after research, beyond watching the movie, the movie got wrong, apparently. Mm-hmm. But it didn't need to be said. For this movie, it didn't need to be said.
Yeah.
They were trying to sort of show that, like, he raised Serena and Venus off Tough Love. And apparently because of them, the title was changed to King Richard rather than Richard Williams. Which shows that, like, it's had, like, Serena and Venus in an almost Iron Man, Tony Stark kind of way when he speaks to Howard, when Howard says to him, like, how did you do the whole fatherhood thing? And Tony says, you know, I learned as I went on. Like, you know, I learned from my father, like, what I hated back then. I look back on and I remember the good things.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening with Serena and Venus. They're remembering the good things. And I hope they watched this movie and they enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure they were in producers.
Fuck.
Which, like...
That makes sense.
Which is why we'll never get a good Jimi Hendrix biopic movie. I'm sorry, we'll never get a good Jimi Hendrix biopic movie. Because Jimi Hendrix's sister is, like, she's got a lock on all of Hendrix's music. As long as Jimi Hendrix's sister, Jimi Hendrix, I can't say Jimi Hendrix's, but Jimi Hendrix has a sister who owns mm-hmm. all of his rights.
Yeah.
And it's the reason why the Jimi Hendrix biopic we have, you hear none of his music. You just hear him playing the guitar well. And it's like, I don't know any of this shit. Because they didn't get any of the rights. The movie was great. Mm-hmm. But you can't have a Jimi Hendrix biopic movie without Jimi Hendrix music.
Yep.
Just don't make the movie, man. But apparently she, like, you know, she knows that, like, it's just going to be a bunch of filmmakers kissing the ground Jimmy walked on when Jimmy was actually not a person you should be kissing the ground on. Same thing with Richard Williams. He wasn't a person you should be kissing the ground he walked on. But at the end of the day, without him, there's the two finest tennis players of all time. Fuck your Federer, fuck your Nadal, fuck your Djokovic, fuck your Tim Henneman. Fuck your Bjork. Fuck your guy that's always, I can never remember his name. You know, the guy, there's no way that was out.
Oh, Johnny, you know, McEnroe?
McEnroe. Borg and McEnroe. Every single finest male tennis player was mopped the floor with by first Venus and then Serena, and then they came together and they did it in doubles. What mm-hmm. the flying motherfuck?
Fucking A.
Like, I can't do anything with my brother. We're so like, we're so polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I'm working in media. My brother is a lawyer. And yep. like, we're planning to play It Takes Two next week. And I'm sort of like, who's going to take lead? I've played the game, so I know what I'm doing. But my brother is like, he's never played the game. So I'm sort of saying to myself, I'm going to, you know, if he hasn't played, he leads. If there's something he misses, I'll help him. Like, sorry, diverting out. I hit my mic. You're going to hear that. But King Richard, overall best movie of the year. I hope Willie Smith's at least gets a nomination. I hope he at least gets a nomination. But there's a good chance he might win because I look at, you know, I don't even know who could win best actor of the year at this point. But then again, I never saw The Father, and you know, old Anthony Hopkins won last year for that. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, again, like Dune, go see it. It's not in cinemas anymore. I don't think it did very well. Box office wise, but you know, just go into IMDb and you know, 8.8 out of 10, certified fresh. Can't really go wrong, to be honest.
True. Sit down, enjoy it.
You know, you can't. You know, even if you're not into tennis, I know you know about Serena, and I know you know about Venus. You can't not.
True.
These girls. I was about to say these guys. Fuck here now. Give me that shovel again. Cancelled. These girls.
Shit.
They took it away.
All right. You ready for Spider-Man?
You're about to take us away right now, aren't you?
Oh yeah. No. I'm ready.
All right, Sebastian. I don't think I am. let me do this first. Start how we ended. All
right,
Sebastian.
Right. So, major spoilers, because I'm not holding back on this one.
Do not hold back.
Right. So, I agree with you. I agree with you that The Dark Knight is still, bar none, the fucking measuring stick as far as superhero movies, because it's so it's still up there for me. However, this movie is the best fucking Spider-Man movie ever made, and I'm talking, I think it's better than Spider-Man 2.
I was going to say, you're a Sam Toby till you die kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. And there's thinking about, just aside from the fan service, taking that away from it, thinking about the arc of Holland's Parker in this one. I mentioned it to you. It's like, how do you do a reboot without doing a reboot? You do this. And the crazy, one of the big things that I took away was that Holland's Spider-Man up to this point hadn't really suffered that much. He didn't suffer.
Yeah, he was a teenager.
Exactly. He was, from what we've seen in the MCU, we don't know if he lost an Uncle Ben. It's never mentioned. Mm-hmm. He loses Tony. But, you know, it's a war. It happens. And even then, that close-knit relationship probably wasn't as close. Then you get to No Way Home. Aunt May dies. Aunt May gives him great power, comes great responsibility. Up to that point.
No, with great power, there must come great responsibility. I have to hit you with some knowledge here. That is the way Stan wrote it in the original comic book.
And it's like, it's thinking about everything else up until that point, he didn't have that lesson. Mm. So he's being Spider-Man without it, and then, you know, he got Stark's technology, and he's got all these gadgets.
I'm nothing without this suit.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Then you come into this movie, you see Maguire's Spider-Man, you see Garfield's Spider-Man, and they are, it's amazing, you know, they're literally the only people in the entire multiverse that understand what he's going through.
And he tells them not to, but they do.
Exactly. It's like, you have no idea what I'm going through. I lost my Uncle Ben. And I love that for Garfield, his thing was Gwen Stacy, because that's something
that... Does Uncle Ben not die in The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
He does, but because of how they were portraying Garfield in this one, Gwen dying had more of an effect on him because he failed to save her.
Yeah.
Because he tried. He, you know, obviously at the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2, he tried.
Yeah.
And he failed. Mm-hmm. Which is why that was whole big thing with Zendaya in this one. But for him to go from, like, sheltered Peter Parker to street level, nobody knows who I am, I have police scanner, I'm just like, I have to help my neighborhood, Spider-Man, was, I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. So, and then, you know, one of the big things coming out of it too was just like, everyone's like, oh, this is redemption for Garfield's Spider-Man. Garfield's Spider-Man was amazing. The scripts weren't great.
Nah.
But his performance as Peter Parker was amazing. His performance as Spider-Man was hilarious. I personally think he's of the three of them, he's the funniest.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like, he stole.
I've said that too many times these two episodes. I'm sorry. When you, like, drink every time you're editing this, when I say 100%. Honestly, it is a but kind of situation. I'm self-aware here. Sorry, keep going.
No worries. And then, you know, obviously you have Alfred Molina come back, Jamie Foxx, fucking Thomas Hayden Church. He wasn't actually there. Because if little knowledge here, little behind the scenes. The scenes where the Sandman turns back into his normal self and the lizard turn back into, you know, they turn back into their normal human selves. Those were scenes, those are shots lifted right out of the fucking movies.
Rhys Ifans and Thomas Hayden Church weren't on set?
I don't think they were, because if you watch the sand kind of melt off of his hand, he does like this, like, almost like he's gonna cry motion.
Yeah.
But it's the exact same expression that he has when he's fighting Black Suit Spider-Man in Spider-Man 3, where he's like melting because he gets thrown into water and he's basically just mud.
Yo, blowing my mind right now, dude.
What blew my mind is how quickly I recognized that.
What about the tree, though, dude? The evil tree.
It's just a tree. It's just a tree in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That tree's like, whoa, what the fuck?
Like, my roots, guys, my roots. And we cannot We cannot talk about this fucking movie without talking about Willem Dafoe. Because
after you talk about Willem Dafoe, I have the reason why this may have been an honorable mention. Is the more I think about this plot hole, the more it hurts the movie for me. But I'll speak about it after you tell everyone about how great his own stunt doing motherfucker Willem Dafoe was.
Well, okay, for context, Willem Dafoe is 66 years old. And
say that again. Say that again.
He is 66 years old.
One more six, and that's the number of the beast, my guys.
I know, and he is a fucking beast. The guy said he wouldn't do the movie unless he was doing the stunts himself.
What a legend.
So obviously knowing that, and you see the fight scenes he has with Holland in this movie, and honest to God, I think they are the most physically brutal fights of any Spider-Man movie.
Mm.
Like the train fight from Spider-Man 2 was great. It was amazing. It was cool. But there was something about just seeing the Goblin and Spider-Man just punching and beating the shit out of each other, putting each other through fucking walls and through floors, and, you know, Peter almost killing him with his glider. It was just like, fuck me. This put into perspective that the Goblin is to Spider-Man what the Joker is to Batman. Because,
oh, yeah.
Out of all the villains, of everything that fucking Peter has done, Holland's Peter at this point in the MCU has done, no one, not a single person, has affected him at such a core level more than the Green Goblin.
It's not even his own Green Goblin. You can't even have a Green Goblin in his own universe.
Exactly.
So it's like someone comes from a different universe. It's like, oh, I can fuck up this Spider-Man as much as I fucked up my own. Fuck yeah! Let me be the first to do it. Like,
like he basically breaks Holland Spider-Man, and he yep. and it, it it's so quick, and it's so, like, you feel it instantly, because, like, you knew right after that fucking pumpkin bomb went off that Aunt May was gonna die, and I was just like,
oh, yeah.
And then, like, swerving, like, oh, she seems okay. Oh, no, nope, she's gonna fucking die.
As soon as I saw her sort of collect shit Peter's gonna need to, like, win, I was like, nah, don't do this to me. But it's like, it's also the first time we see Peter's spider sense faltering. She, like, you know, when, like, he puts his hand on Tony Stark so he can read that he's dying in Endgame. He does almost the exact same move. I'm pretty sure the angle is shot the same
mm-hmm.
as he's trying to read Aunt May, and he can't read whether or not she's dying because he's convinced that he's wrong. So he's like, no, my spider sense is broken. It must be. She's not. She can't be dead. She can't be dying. And it just hurts so much. And it's the first time we actually see spider sense visualized in a Spider-Man movie. And I'm so happy.
Like, that whole sequence when they're in Happy's apartment, and he's just, like, walking around, and he's just, like, looking around. Everyone's like, you know, what's going on? What's going on? And he's.
I meant the Doctor Strange force.
Although that was also really fucking cool.
You see the wiggly lines pretty much like they do in the comics.
And the way his fucking hands were just moving all over the place.
I wonder how they VFX that, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Because in between the wiggly lines, the background is in focus.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually is the way they visualize, the way they comic booked Spider-Sense working in a movie that has never been done before. We just, like, the closest we came was Spider-Man's hairs moving up when the aliens invaded, or the Chitauri in, well, it wasn't Chitauri, it was the Black Order. Sorry, got my own information fucked up there. But so my plot hole: how does Happy Hogan know Aunt May through Spider-Man? Happy Hogan doesn't know Aunt May through Spider-Man. Happy Hogan only knows Aunt May through Peter Parker. And my only explanation I can find is go back to Endgame and it's Hulk's explanation of how time travel works in the MCU, which is, now is my present. If I go to my past, that is my future. Like, if I go to my past, that, like, that becomes my future and becomes my current present, and my present now becomes my past. And what has happened before that can't now be changed, which is my only way to explain it, which seems a bit bullshit and no one seems to be saying it online, but I'm not the only person that has sort of picked that sort of moment out. It's like, wait, how?
Okay, so hold on. I want to take a stab at possibly figuring this out, because as okay. you were talking about it, I was thinking about it. Okay, so.
Okay, cool. Awesome. I'm glad.
All right, so obviously we know that Happy meets May through Peter. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
So they meet, and, you know, they obviously they have this relationship. Obviously, she wants to end it. He doesn't want to. You know, he read more into it than it was. It was that whole thing.
Yeah.
What Strange's spell did was erase Peter from memory, everyone's memory, mm-hmm. right? So nobody remembers Peter. But at the point when Strange did the spell, Happy already had the memories of May. So that in Happy's mind, you know, May was just a chick, a girl that he really liked. Mm. She didn't like him as much as he liked her, but he still cared for her.
Yeah.
All that was erased was that she had a nephew. That's gone.
So you kind of got to separate Spider-Man and Peter. So, like, sort of add more emphasis to Doctor Strange's lines. The problem is you trying to live two lives.
Mm-hmm. And essentially what he does is he decides to live as Spider-Man and let Peter Parker
vanish. Is this why Zendaya... So I think one of the biggest things I saw at the end of Spider-Man is Zendaya still has the Black Diala necklace, the broken Black Diala necklace,
mm-hmm.
which she must look at as Michelle Watson now, and go, how the fuck do I have this?
But she likes it, so that's probably why she keeps it.
But no one has anything else physical. Happy has no physical representation of Peter. Not even Ned has a physical representation of Peter, because Peter's the one that has the Emperor figurine.
The Lego Sidious.
Which I think is why there was such a focus on it, which is, it's like, that's how Peter's going to get back to Ned, and it's the necklace as why Peter is going to get back to Zendaya. But I hope there's not a whole half a movie of Peter trying to make people remember who he is. I hope.
Yeah, I don't want that either.
I don't want that.
Like, bro, you've essentially, he's rebooted himself. Like, you're clean slate. The MCU still knows that Spider-Man exists. Spider-Man is still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
mm-hmm.
you know, Peter Parker has his anonymity back.
The whole world does. The whole world still knows that Spider-Man was involved in stopping Thanos.
Okay.
That's so not now, changed.
True. So now, I just last question to round it out.
Mm.
Just specifically because it is about Spider-Man, and I'm low-key really happy that we ended it with Spider-Man. How do you think the MCU essentially handed that Brand New Day storyline? Because everyone fucking hated the comic, but I personally think...
Is it One More Day?
Yeah, One More Day. Yeah, you're right.
Sorry. I read it before we watched the movie. I read it when I told you I was going to read it, by the way. I read it that night. I didn't like it, but I had to get through it.
Oh, no. Me either. I didn't like it either. But I feel like the movie handled it way better, and in a way that made sense.
And we're about to get a Mephisto if you stay to the end of the credits. But, I mean, you don't need to anymore, because it's online. Doctor Strange 2. So, if you've seen What If... Yes, it's Doctor Strange Supreme, is what our MCU is calling it. Anyone who is a Marvel fan, it's Mephisto. Like, there's no other way they can bring in Mephisto's character anymore besides, like, alternating a Doctor Strange character. And you even see it in What If, when it goes full red and it's just a close up of Doctor Strange Supreme, and he has like the goatee and like the evil eyebrows and shit, and he's just full red. I was like, yeah, that's them referencing Mephisto. But although I hear Defender Strange is meant to be in Doctor Strange 2 as well, which is pretty cool.
I'm really looking forward to the insanity that is that movie.
It is not the first comic book Kevin has taken from the MCU and has given new life. Like you said earlier, Shang-Chi took a racist, hated character and sort of said, no, we can do this right now. We're confident in the way we handle our characters. It's to the point where Simu Liu was like, he was so obsessed with the comic books that he was like, why am I wearing Jordans? I need to be wearing like battle boots and shit. And then when he read the script and was acting in it, it's like, oh, you're trying to make this relatable. I was like, that was the problem that Shang-Chi already has. It wasn't relatable. Like, no.
Give me
no.
my Jordans, bro.
Yeah, like, that is how you make, you know, that is how you make a character like that relatable. Give them something that's like, oh, shit, you know, Shang-Chi wears Jordans. I wear Jordans, so I could be Shang-Chi. But if we're talking multiverse, I want to end people with an exciting theory for 2022. I think I may be one of the first people to think about this theory, which is I want to talk about Four real quick. Getting excited for 2022. I know that's next week's episode, foreshadowing, but I'm not going to talk about Four next episode. It's not in my excitedness for 2022. Sorry. Okay. But we know the villain is Gord the God Butcher, right? And we know 4 comes out after Doctor Strange 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the multiverse has such an effect on our MCU timeline that there's a whole lot of 4s that come into our timeline, i.e. Natalie Portman's 4, and a really super buff, mega buff 4. Because what have we seen in terms of, like, pre-game for 4? Chris Hemsworth getting unrealistically big.
Yeah, that dude's huge.
I think, in a way, Gore the God Butcher is like Mordo. So, you know, Mordo's like, we need less wizards.
Yeah.
That's why Gore the God Butcher exists. There's too many gods. I need to, you know, level the playing field. Too many gods. Let me get the Necro Sword and just go slice, slice, slice. We have our 4, who now is brains and brawn, but needs more brains. So he gets Natalie Portman's 4. But he also needs more brawn. So he gets Super Buff 4. Super Buff 4, Natalie Portman's 4, are variants in our timeline who will team up with our 4 to beat Gore the God Butcher. Boom. 4, fucking Love A. and Thunder. Spoiled. You heard it here first, motherfuckers. Welcome to 2022. We'll see you next year. You fucking motherfuckers.
Take care, everyone. Happy New Year.
Come join us on this trip. Now all I do is pulling out the script.
Come on, man. Come join us on the trip. I'm sorry. Now we're throwing out the script. I hope we don't charge a penny. I hear the weakness calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.